This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballaman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike Ballaman. This is London FinTech Podcast, episode 114, brought to you in association with Blue Motor Finance, Capital.com and Smart Pension. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Stephen Minder, founder and CEO of Super Seminole InsurTech, bought by many, who are on the show way back in LFP 027 in May 2015, when, as he said, the key players in this sector across the whole of Europe can be counted on one's fingers. Well, I guess he is less lonely now, as you need far more fingers these days. As always, appearing on the London FinTech Podcast is a complete guarantee of fame and fortune, and I see that the magic has rubbed off on Bought by Many, who now have over 600,000 members in over 320 specialist insurance groups. They get a super impressive FIFO trust rating of 4.7 out of 5 from nigh on 6,000 reviews, which is great going in any sector, but particularly in the insurance sector, which is not always loved by its clients. Their website says, "Technology is at the heart of our offer, and we're proud to be at the forefront of fintech innovation. In 2016, we were featured in the European FinTech 50 list, and in 2017, we were named as one of the 15 ones to watch companies by the Sunday Times TechTrack. And Stephen tells me that just this month, Bought by Many was featured at number 13 in the Sunday Times TechTrack, the only insurtech to appear." Which is super impressive stuff. Stephen's here today to update us on how he sees the world of insurtech, being, for want of a better word, an elder in the sector. And also, he's dead keen to tell us about the emphasis and importance of people. I thought the latter was a rather curious topic, as I've never seen a business without people. However, Stephen tells me this is a super important topic for reasons he'll go into, no doubt more subtle than my suggestion. He also went further, and against my protestations that I might fall asleep, he promised to sex it up. So you, dear listeners, can be the judge and I can catch up on sleep if it isn't. I'd have thought that using people was an obvious business strategy. However, Stephen has created the best-known insurtech in the UK and the most successful and been in this game for 6 years. So as well as a background of where insurtech is at the moment, where it's going, I guess we should listen to why he thinks people are important and why this is a radical idea. Plenty to talk about, so let's get on with the show. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for joining me today.
Mike, good to be here. And I have to say, I cannot believe it's been 3 years since I was last sitting across the table from you.
No, indeed. Tempus definitely sort of fugus, doesn't it, really? It is rather crazy. And it's also a sign of the sector and how long it's been around, particularly in insurtech, that, sarcasm aside, you actually are an elder yourself.
Thank you.
You do have actually a bit of grey in your beard to show it in the insurtech sector. Now, in terms of sort of chit-chat, you're a sort of typical busy entrepreneur, and for my listeners, you don't generally hear this little bit, but the average show, I turn up and I sit there and say, well, we need some chit-chat for the starter course. What do you do? And they say, I just go to work. I don't do anything. I'm a fintecher. And so, somewhat like what you said, and so I gave you an example that a couple of episodes ago, my guest had cycled from Colombia to Canada. So with a huge leap of imagination, you mentioned cycling as well. And
yes,
you told me that you cycled from Berlin to London, which is a bit tricky with the water in the middle.
Also sounds a little bit less far than Colombia to Canada.
Yes, indeed.
But
it is.
It's 1,000 kilometres, so 600 miles. It was to commemorate the 80th anniversary of the Kinder transport. I don't know if that's something that...
I know Kinder eggs are chocolate.
Yeah, it's not. Kinder is in German for children, so they're presuming that's where Kinder Egg's name comes from. But the Kinder transport was quite an amazing episode in British history. It started in December 1938 and finished in September 1939. The British government agreed to take in up to 15,000 orphaned German children, and it turned out to be German and Austrian, who had been orphaned by the Nazi regime in the run-up to the Second World War, and all that was required was that a £50 pledge had to be made to the British government to guarantee that these children would be well looked after once they arrived. And so with no passports and no visas, one by one, and then eventually 10 by 10, and then hundreds by hundreds, these kids started arriving on trains from Berlin to Liverpool Street, having taken the ferry across from the Hook of Holland to Harwich, so that's how the water was dealt with. And then were taken in by very average British families and looked after. These kids almost certainly never saw their parents ever again. And I think it's an amazing part of British history that is really not well known. Amazing insight into how governments can genuinely look after individuals if they want to be bold. And an amazing insight into how very average families can make lasting contributions to society. And it was particularly poignant, I think, at the time. It was exactly when Trump was talking about breaking up families on the Mexican border. There was a whole pile of conversation about refugee crises in many parts of the world and boats sinking in the Mediterranean. And yet, this small part of British history seems to have long since been forgotten. So 42 of us cycled over 6 days from Berlin to London. We were sent on our way by the deputy leader of the Reichstag and met in London by the German ambassador. And it was a really momentous experience, like a really great experience, including we cycled with an 81-year-old gentleman who had, at the age of 17 months, been on the Kinder transport himself.
Wow, that's a really sort of fantastic story. And I happened to see on the train coming in that Jeremy Corbyn plans to change the sort of history lessons, apparently, for the UK to emphasise even more how terrible Britain was. And like all global empires, we did plenty of bad things and got things wrong. But on balance, we did a lot of good, not least of which liberating slavery, which, as I've mentioned before on the podcast, cost so much money in 1840 that people like you and me, in our lifetime, some of our taxes have gone to paying off the debt to liberate the slaves worldwide, an astronomical sum of money. And also, I saw something today, actually, an academic study on attitudes towards political correctness in the States and in the media, and we all in social media, or some of us, some idiots like me, tend to amplify the extreme stuff, and the world will seem very terrible through social media. But actually, interestingly, the vast majority of people of all political parties, other than the radical left in the States, think that political correctness has gone too far, it inhibits things, and people are oversensitive, and all that kind of stuff. And I did actually add a review to a coffee shop this morning, because I'm completely nauseated by virtue signalling, of which our Prime Minister seems to lead the way. I was in a coffee shop called Redemption Coffee, I think, or Rehabilitation Coffee, I think Redemption Coffee, just south of Smithfield's Market. And they're based in Aylesbury Prison, and they take prisoners and show them how to be baristas and all that kind of stuff, and then give them a job when they come out. And my review said, I'm, you know, fed up of virtue signalers, but I just love people doing virtue.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful story. Excellent. So having sort of started my introduction with some sort of fierce topspin on the ping pong table and try to put you on the back foot, you've completely give me some backspin there and cut the ground from underneath my attacking feet.
I long hope and expect to be able to do that over the next hour or so.
Yes, it's not a conflict, Stephen. It doesn't matter as long as I win.
Okay.
Okay, so the main course then. So you were very keen on talking about people for some reason, and I said you can talk about people and why people are important. This is a unique insight that you've got to share with everybody listening, of course, all of whom are people, by the way.
Yep.
But before that, as we haven't spoken for 3 years, and as at the time there were roughly half a dozen insurance techs around Europe. And Jonathan Howard, I'm sure you know from PwC, was on last year and they've done this report with Startup Bootcamp InsurTech or something like that. 2,500 insurance techs around Europe these days. Maybe you'll just give folks your overview as a real insider on how insurance tech's been changing over the last 3 years and where you see it going. And then we can sort of lead into why you have your unique insight that people are important.
Yeah, so I think this is interesting. And I agree completely. This opportunity space to, for lack of a better word, disrupt the global multi-trillion dollar insurance market has been at least identified by vast numbers of individuals. And that has changed dramatically since when we started. When we set up Bought by Many in September 2012, you know, I've gone on record to say we were literally called bonkers for wanting to do this. Why on earth did the world need another insurance company? And lots of people tried to dissuade us from doing that. Fast forward 6 years, and now it's almost impossible to go through a week without at least becoming aware of an insurance tech conference that is taking place somewhere in the world. Europe's largest InsurTech conference recently took place in Amsterdam, had over 2,000 attendees, and in Vegas at the beginning of October, the insurance tech conference took place and it had 6,500 attendees. I mean, this is just like off the scale huge. And other than making vast amounts of money for conference organizers, there's clearly a massive opportunity space for insurers, for investors, and for entrepreneurs to come together and to talk about what the opportunity space is here and to debate and discuss and to work out whether there really is as big an opportunity to disrupt this marketplace as many suggest there is.
So one of the things that I have seen in terms of those younger insurtechs that I've been on the podcast since speaking to you is that one of the things that's led that sort of phase change, as it were, from people saying you're bonkers and that there being a sort of handful of people on in a pub rather than sort of vast conferences, is this model of reinsurance as a service, or is the insurance companies waking up and providing capacity to little insurer tech? So, look, we'll do the insurer stuff. Yep. You know, join us where you like at whatever level of the stack, and you go and do your bit. Is that sort of broadly the main reason that things have changed, or is that one of many reasons?
So that is definitely an important change that has taken place. So when we wanted to get delegated authorities to effectively hold the pen in the insurance space, about 4 years ago, no insurer would pay any attention to us. In fact, actually, famously, one insurer said, go away, get some more experience and come back in 10 years. Our response to that at the time was to go buy a business that had these delegated authorities, and we've owned this business for a little over 3 years.
Which is?
A business that was called Brooks Braithwaite. That brand itself doesn't exist anymore, but we took over the capability, the delegated authorities.
And what was it, an insurance broker?
It was technically an insurance broker, but what I call a full service broker. So it had full delegated authorities for not just pricing and for underwriting, but for claims as well.
So is that like a managing general agent, which I will sort of forget what they are?
So correct. This is exactly like a managing general agent, an MGA, and although whether you actually have that title or not, it absolutely behaved like that. And having garnered that capability, we were able to go on from that and then to look to build out that capability. And in fact, we had detailed conversations thereafter with a bunch of the world's biggest reinsurers about the idea of taking them directly to market. One of those reinsurers was Munich Re, who seemed genuinely interested in doing this. Andy Rear, who I know has been on one of your podcasts in the past, and I went to a main board meeting at Munich Re on the 18th of January 2016 with the idea of Munich Re using their Great Lakes license and going directly to marketplace. That was a great meeting, and that was the forerunner to Andy setting up Munich Re Digital Partners. I'm delighted and honoured to say we were the first partner, and we went live with our first own branded insurance offering in February of last year, so 20 months ago. We chose to pick on pet insurance because it was a marketplace we knew well, a big, fast-growing marketplace with two large incumbents and not much innovation.
Excellent. Well, as folks know, I've always been super impressed by Andy and Munich Re, and it's a rare example in any sector or segment of fintech as a whole where one firm has made such a difference to the outlook. And I think the fact that they did this sort of reinsurance as a service, as I said, you can sort of plug in to the wall, as it were, get your electricity from it, has really, in terms of what I heard from other insurance techs, it's really led other insurance companies to go, oh, if Munich Re are doing it, some, pardon me, but these are kind of roughly his words, some sleepy, huge,
yes,
southern German, you know, reinsurer, and they're not sexy and they didn't spend any money on branding, yada, yada, yada. If they're doing it, oh, we better wake up. And that sort of, you know, acted as a catalyst, really, yes, for the rest of the industry to go, ah, oh, you know, these people aren't the little whippersnappers after all. Well, actually, a lot of them are, but maybe we should take them more seriously.
Yes.
If only because, as we've seen across fintech as a whole, and I think it's still the case that, sort of sadly or not the case, but if every fintech, this is my view, in London disappeared overnight, a lot of people would be upset tomorrow and have nowhere to go to work, but it wouldn't actually change the economy as such. However, what would have changed forever is the competitive landscape between these huge incumbents, because some of them are a bit more with it,
yes,
and some of them ain't. So if you all disappeared overnight, the ones who are a little bit more sexy and a little bit sort of up more up the sort of tech and the fin curve would actually pull ahead of their competition. So that's super important.
Yes, that's definitely true. And I also think that I would like to hope that the landscape has changed dramatically for other reasons as well as just like people would miss them. I'd like to think that the impact that the insurtech industry is beginning to have on the expectation level of consumers has changed. And, you know, I think that, you know, go back only a few years, consumers just felt that every single interaction with the insurance industry was a bad one. Consumers felt like, oh, you've got to be kidding me, my motor insurance premium is up for renewal. Like, take a deep breath, I'll write off tonight to get on with it. I know that I'm going to get ripped off, I know that I'm going to make a mistake, but I'm just going to do it and live with it.
Yes, and it's interesting, remarked on this in the show in the past, that most of the people who come on the show with an insurance background, and you don't necessarily have an insurance background as such, have actually apologised for being in insurance and said, well, when I was at school, I never wanted to go into insurance, yada, yada, yada. But actually, nobody who's come from a banking or FS background ever sort of says, well, when I was at school, I didn't want to be. So there is this sort of thing hanging over it. And of course, as we touched on before, the nature of insurance is a strange thing, because with my motor insurance, I just keep forking out money and I get nothing back,
yep,
apart from in a rare circumstance where something goes wrong. And then I hope I get something,
yep,
back. So it's a very bizarre kind of contract. It's not like having an app-only bank on your phone and you tap your card every day and it delivers or it doesn't deliver and you know how well it's doing. If I insure my Ming vase with you, I just fork out money year in, year out, year in, year out, year in, year out. One day it breaks, I think, oh shit, I hope those guys are as good as they say they are or FIFO say they are.
So you're not alone in thinking this way, and we get that completely. So it's in response to that we've created this concept of a money-back policy. So that if you don't make a claim, we give you 20% of your premium back again. So this is a slightly different from saying I get all of my money back because I don't get anything.
Sorry, when you say you've created it, that seems very similar to a no-claims bonus.
But a no-claims bonus is only if you renew next year, you get a discount off next year's premium. This, we will give you back the money in exactly the form in the way you paid it, by credit card or direct debit or whatever it might be. And whether you renew or not. Renewing is your decision.
It's subtly different, because if I transfer motor insurer, they say how many years of no-claims you got. Oh, my previous one, I got 7. But it is a pile of hassle that point if they ask a validation, because I lost the certificates of 5 years ago, yada, 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 or,
exactly,
or something like that. So you've smoothed the process.
So we've just said to you loud and clear, you don't make a claim at the end of this year. If you have our money back policy, you'll get 20% of your premium back. End of story, no questions asked, and we will pay it back to you in precisely the way you've been paying your premiums.
Right, okay, so this starts to lead into the sort of the second topic. But so wrapping up InsurTech at the moment and where it's going, one of the things that you're clearly trying to do in terms of what you say is just, unsurprisingly, make it more digital, which is a smooth journey, make it much easier, live up to 21st century customer expectations of what an industry should deliver and how it does it and all that kind of stuff. So where do you see it going for the insurance tech sector from here? And then, of course, you can come into why you have your unique insight that human beings are of importance.
So rather than touch on where I think the sector is going to go, because I really genuinely haven't got a crystal ball, or at least not one that works, I think there are some things that are critically important in this process. And if you don't mind, I'll kind of talk about that for 2 minutes. Because I think that what the insurance industry has done has been to take advantage of individuals. And that has created the opportunity for insurtechs to start. And so coming back to your earlier question about why now, what suddenly happened, I think there's just been an increasing realization that the historic past, fleecing, taking advantage, whatever language you want to use, can't continue. And that if the physician isn't going to heal themselves, someone's going to have to come along and heal the physician. So this concept of, I don't know, like I pick a random example, been in the paper quite a lot recently, of renewing customers paying significantly more than new customers. So you don't like the state of your premium, you ring up and you just say, look, I'm paying too much. And they say, oh, no problem, we'll discount that renewal premium by £100 just for the taking the trouble of calling us. I mean, this is bonkers. It's completely nuts.
It is bonkers because we've just renewed our house insurance policy and we didn't do that.
So more for you, right? Right? So unless, of course, you do it with Bought by Many, because we've made a statement that we will never, ever charge a renewing customer more than a new customer.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And other things, so like this idea that if you want to pay your insurance premium monthly rather than annually up front, there's going to be a massive APR. You know, one of the very large insurers makes more than 100% of their profits just from interest charges. Again,
wow.
This is insane. This is not a lending industry. This is an insurance industry. So if you come to Bought by Many, you pay zero interest. Your monthly payments are exactly the same as your annual payment divided by 12. End of story. And that means that you can cancel monthly at no charge as well. And people do, right? They think that this, we're making this up and that there's going to be some hidden agenda. So they cancel just to test us. And guess what? They find that they can cancel and there is no penalty charge for cancelling. And then they come back the next week and go, OK, fine. So you pass that test. I guess you're kind of pretty serious about this.
So what you're talking about there, and those are very good examples, and I am kicking myself for not thinking of you guys, but as you've probably spotted, momentum is a big thing. And in the modern world, we're all bloody busy.
Yes.
Car insurance, house insurance.
Yes, right.
I've got a daughter's birthday, Bridget's birthday. I mean, I'm going on holiday and writing books. So, you know, everyone's so busy that the amount of attention they have for something is minimal, which, of course, the incumbents are taking advantage of.
Yes.
Sort of rollovers and all that kind of stuff. But we touched on this years ago, which is that it's very easy to compare insurance or other things by price, and there are plenty of sites doing that, although there's a problem around those sites and backhanders and all this kind of stuff, commissions. But comparing by quality is much harder. If I go to Amazon and I look at a CD, I think, oh, I'm really bored of my music collection, I want a new one. I look there. The ratings are actually no good for me on the CDs because I might not like the music. It can be 99 five stars. I go, oh, that's crap, but I hear it. However, if it's a book on a topic that I'm interested in, this topic, then the Amazon ratings are extremely helpful. And actually, I buy more by quality. I mean, doing Rotterdam Syndicate Company, I buy more by the quality of the book than the price. So if there's a book that's got 99 five-star reviews and it's 15 quid, or there's one that's got 99 one-star reviews and it's 10 quid, of course, I'll buy the 15 quid. Now, the challenge has been, and I ain't heard an answer to it yet, but it's obviously something that you wake up and you bang your head against every day, or at least you're sort of cutting through some way. How are you ever going to change the market, or change at least some people's behaviour, to thinking in that manner, which is actually, I want pet insurance, I want house insurance, based on quality.
Yes.
It's a bit like going to a coffee shop, or a bar, or a pub, or a restaurant. Sometimes you go to the cheapest. But most of the time, next to nobody goes to the cheapest in any of those categories.
Yes.
They go for some kind of quality level and then look at something that's similar price. How are you in the industry ever going to get through that
one? So I think that the reason it's different from the examples you just gave is that it's really easy to go test a coffee, right? You said you went to a coffee at Smithfield's this morning, right? If you had a good experience, you'll go back. If you had a bad experience, it cost you £2.50, end of story, who cares? Right? Whereas in the insurance space, you never actually know until you make a claim or make a cancellation or a change at some point what the overall experience is going to be like. And that's why in your preamble, you talked about our FIFO ratings, why we think that's so critically important. Because don't trust us, don't listen to what we've got to say, go talk to individuals.
Don't trust us. That's a really good one to take out of context, actually.
No, but I'm totally fine. Do not expect us, do not come to us and listen to our word alone. In fact, I'm very happy for you to attach no importance to our word in this case at all. Go look at these 6,000 people who aren't free-form, free-loading commentators. They are customers of Bought by Many who have interacted with us. And critically important, and this is the bit that wasn't in your preamble, that those FIFO reviews, of which there are, as you say, over 6,000, are real individuals who aren't just people who have bought, but that includes claimants and people who've made midterm adjustments, people who have cancelled. And go look at what they've got to say. There are a bunch of them who have given us one star. Right, a load of those one-star people who are individuals who we've turned down for claims. Guess what? We're not a charity. You make a fraudulent claim, we are going to turn you down. And even if you try and hold us to ransom by say, pay my claim or I'm going to give you a one-star rating, we're still going to turn down your claim. But look at what that has got to say. And genuinely, the issue in this insurance industry that we exist in today, it's really very hard to get independent reviews of what the experience is going to be like before you are absolutely on the journey with the insurer and experiencing it for yourself. And this is what we're trying to change.
Okay, so let's touch on this one because I ain't never touched it on the podcast before and I don't really know myself. So you've got FIFO, I've forgotten who it was. Someone was on the show the other week and they've got Trustpilot and there's a whole bunch of them. And I don't know which is which and which is best and which is worst and all that kind of stuff. And everybody with a good rating has got a good rating. And if they didn't have a good rating, they wouldn't show it. So I hear what you say, but it's just like as a consumer, I go somewhere and it says it's got a good rating. It's like food or lunch places. They all say, oh, we've got a 5-star hygiene rating.
Yep.
You only ever see people with a 5-star hygiene rating. Someone's got one, never sticks on the wall. So putting the insurance thing to one side, how do you as a consumer, a digital consumer of other things, let's say outside insurance to start off with, how do you rate Trustpilot, FIFO, or all these kind of things?
How do you compare them?
Yeah. Are they all the same? Or are they just different versions?
Not really. So we use FIFO and not Trustpilot. They both score out of 5. There is one fundamental difference between Trustpilot and FIFO. Anybody, whether they've had any experience of Bought by Many or not, could go and write a review for us on Trustpilot. So it could be a competitor, it could be a disgruntled individual who's come across us in the middle of the street. They can go and write something positive or negative about us on Trustpilot. On FIFO...
A bit like TripAdvisor,
exactly like TripAdvisor. On FIFO, the only individuals who get to review us are those who have had a commercial relationship with us, good or bad. So that means it's a bit more of a... Every single person in the world can go read those reviews, but to add to that review backlog, you have to have been at some point a Bought by Many customer. And that means, it, from our perspective, it's a much more robust note of what we're like. You know, if you go to Trustpilot, my mother could go on and write a review, whether she'd been a customer of us or not. Whereas in FIFO, she wouldn't be able to unless she was.
I didn't know that. That's good to know. And you mentioned something about TripAdvisor before. And TripAdvisor, I used to find useful for holidays and that kind of stuff. And now I find it much, much less. Is that a long-term trend of sort of noise, shall we say, entering the equation?
I think that my personal experience of these things is that it has to be really directly relevant to you for you to want to continue to use it. And that's the challenge for us as the volume of FIFO reviews
increases for us to make sure that they always are relevant to the next customer who is looking to come along and say, look, you know, I've never really heard of Bought by Many before. Somebody told me down the vet or in the hairdresser or something about that this is good. I really want to come to my own conclusion myself. We need to make sure that when they come to our FIFO review, that it is relevant, it speaks to them, they can find like-minded individuals who have reviewed us, good and bad, and it makes sense to them.
And wrapping up on the quality point, so it's not just the question of the quality of Bought by Many. It's presumably, I don't know whether you can segment it, it's a question of the quality or the marks out of five, I was about to say out of 10, out of five for, let's say, paying insurance claims at all,
yes,
or paying them rapidly,
yes,
or dealing with my doodahs, or whatever the various aspects of your service are. You provide various different aspects. Is it possible to sort of segment those?
So you can go read a bunch of the reviews and look at those. You know, they come under categories of claims under renewals. But we put them, critically, we put them all together.
Okay.
Because, you know, you can pick them apart as an individual, so you can go and have a look.
But it doesn't happen automatically.
But the point that we want to know is that, you know, if you're experiencing Bought by Many for the first time, you don't know whether you're going to be a claimant.
Yeah.
You don't know whether you're going to make a midterm adjustment. So you need to look at the reviews in the round,
yes,
to know what your overall experience is.
No, I get that. And you're excellent. It was simply a question of, can I double click on it and drill down then and say, oh, actually, fantastic at paying claims, but sometimes it's really slow, or they pay it very quickly, or whatever. Good. Right. Okay. So the astute, sharp-eared listener may have noticed my somewhat sarcastic attitude at the beginning, that you have this revelation of the importance of people. So that's definitely some top spin. So how are you going to get that one back over the net without bringing tears to my eyes of some sort of story?
So can I offer you a quote from somebody who's far more learned in this subject than I am as a justification for why I think this is an important subject? I'm going to take that as an implicit yes, Mike. So Peter Thiel said, computers are complements for humans, not substitutes. The most valuable businesses of coming decades will be built by entrepreneurs who seek to empower people rather than to try to make them obsolete. And I think that my personal take on that is that people like people in general. That doesn't build long-term, sustainable, economically viable businesses. But we're trying really hard to bring the best of technology to the best of the crew that we put together here to genuinely, genuinely wow individuals when they come to having some interaction with us.
Yeah, I think one of the problems is that I agree entirely with your premise, and I've rarely met anybody who would disagree with the premise, other than, as I mentioned before, when I used to go to conferences, which by and large I avoid, there's often some lunatic saying, oh, computers will price everything far better than any human being can, AI, neural languages, net, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. So from my perspective, it's a kind of premise, it's a hypothesis, which is proven. But I think you were saying to me when we were chatting over the phone beforehand that this isn't the case, and there are plenty of techs or fintechs or insurtechs out there or whatever that do have a concept that the long-term aim is to, you know, remove everybody other than sort of you and the chief bottle washer in the company and have computers humming in the corner. But I don't meet those kind of people, largely because I probably filter them out.
But there are. I mean, there are a number of very significant insurtech businesses that genuinely think that the best way to interact is via a chatbot. And for some segment of the population, I'm sure that's completely right. But our experience for our target customer base is that that is not their channel of choice. Now, let's be clear. If you want to only interact with a computer and you come to us, you can absolutely do that. You can go end to end, including claims, with no human involvement whatsoever. And we'd be delighted if you did that. Let me be really clear. Your experience should be great. We expect it to be great. And if you don't want to pick up the phone or go onto live chat or Facebook Messenger and just deal directly with us online, that's completely fine. And that is what this business has been built to do. However, a significant number of people also think, you know what, I just need to check that out, or that doesn't quite make sense to me, or what happens if I ring up and say, will you give me a cheaper quote? And they want to do that. And by the way, who is Bought by Many, right? Like, you know, they might ring up just to check that we really are on the end of the phone.
I'm with you on that one. And in terms of your FIFO rating, I turned up this morning and found that you've got a very sort of solid steel front door with sort of press buzzer, and I couldn't actually see a buzzer, so I pressed everything going and didn't manage to get in until one of your people let me in.
Felt sorry for you standing on the doorstep.
Yes, exactly. So yes, you've certainly got a digital interface outside the front door, but you're not used to having people knock on it. Yes, so I get that. And in terms of wrapping up this people aspect,
so maybe what I can best summarize in a kind of mathematical way, the actuary that I am, we think that winning in insurance is a mathematical formula of technology plus people, not technology or people.
I think it might be technology times people.
Yeah, possibly. I'm happy with that option as well.
Or technology to the power of people, or people to the power of technology.
I'm less positive those last two options. So should I give you some examples of how we think about this and how we use this? So just picking a few examples, if we look at technology-empowered product people, that enables us to create better insurance products. And that word better, by the way, is incredibly pervasive in everything that we do. So our mission statement is about providing better insurance for everyone, where we define better as partly about price, partly about product design, and partly about customer experience. Historically, insurance has only ever been about price. So you go onto a price comparison site and you rank, the prices are ranked for you. Everyone's eye immediately goes to the cheapest and you pick probably a brand that you recognize in the top three or the cheapest three, more correctly. And actually, that doesn't say anything at all about the quality of the product or indeed what your experience is going to be like once you bought it. So what have we done with that? So we use vast amounts of consumer data to understand what individuals really are looking for in the space, and that enables us to create better products. And then we take the insight from that and use it to build a much better set of documentation. So you buy a bought by many product and you'll get a policy document that is designed and is bespoke to you. There are no extraneous words in it. It will have probably less than half the average number of words in the marketplace. I believe we're the only insurance business to have a Fairer Finance Award, which we should just understand as a plain English award, because we want people to engage with these things. We want people to say, you know, I'm not quite sure whether I'm covered for that or not. I know, I'll go look at my policy document. And, you know, you get that stored in the My Account section of our website. We email it to you as well when you buy the policy. And critically, in the middle of it, it's got a page that says, what's not covered? So look at that page, go, oh, yeah, I want to make a claim. It's not on that page. I'll be fine. And you will be fine. Yeah, and you'll get that experience by dealing with us online or over the telephone. So I guess my first example is tech-enabled product people create better products. So how about tech-enabled marketers? So Bought by Many at its core is a digital marketing business. That is really what we do. And I think that what's important in that game is to really understand how to enable customers who are looking for something in the space where we can help them, that they find us. Because, you know, let's be clear, Bought by Many is a relatively new brand in the space, and people might have heard of Aviva or Legal & General, but it's unlikely that for the first time Bought by Many is going to be the brand that kind of trips off their tongue. So we work incredibly hard with all the different search and social media engines to enable individuals to find us quickly and easily. So good example here is if you're going online and you want to find the best pet insurance policy, you type into Google search bar, best pet insurance. This is actually what's called a Google direct answer. So Google has worked out how to get you as the individual the best answer to that question. And delightfully, at least last time I checked, that was a Bought by Many answer. And so these are ways for consumers for the very first time to find us. This is about using technology smartly, but enabling our digital marketing crew to just be much more effective. Perhaps a really stronger example in this space, in a space that probably individuals wouldn't expect us to talk about, is about using technology to create empathic people. And that feels like a bit of a contradiction or a bit of an oxymoron, right? So how can you use technology to enable people to show empathy? So one of the things that we do, which if you have not heard this before or not had your direct experience, you're going to think that sounds really odd. If you ring up or you go online and you tell us that your pet has died, and this, you know, does happen from time to time,
sadly. Actually, I happened to see, when I looked at FIFA, a rating along these lines. Somebody's pet had died, and that was very upsetting to them.
Yep.
And they were complimentary, actually.
Right. So did they say why they were complimentary? Do you remember why they said? No, I don't know this particular rating. Out of all 6,000, I read lots, but I can't remember.
Nor do I remember the name of the animal.
Doesn't matter. Let me tell you what they will have experienced.
I think the name of the animal matters very much, actually, to the person.
For sure. So, in fact, in our policy document, your animal's name appears liberally throughout it. So in this particular case, we will send you a handwritten condolence card. So the claims team, the very first thing that they do is to handwrite a condolence card and mail it to you. So you physically get through the door a card that's printed with Bought by Many's name on it, so you know it's from us, but a handwritten condolence card that specifically refers to the name of your lost pet, your recently passed pet. And this is because we want people to understand. We really understand them. We really understand what's important to them. This absolutely does not in any way have any economic significance to us. But it's about enabling us to persuade consumers that there is a human face to the insurance industry that's tech-enabled, right? So our ability to do that cost-effectively and efficiently is critical, because if we're spending hours on hours doing every single one of these, then we'll never get them sorted in a financially attractive way. But it is also about just being human.
Excellent. Okay, well, I think that's a good way to wrap that up. And I think just kind of uniting your language and mine and the sort of different ideas about covering this sort of topic on a show, I think using my sort of language and framing, I think what you're not advocating is the importance of people, because even those people I've heard saying that tech can run everything know that you need a person to program the computer, you need a person to run the business, you need
That's
a person to create it.
I think you might well get computers to build tech in the future, but this is a whole
yes,
separate conversation.
Exactly. That's another episode entirely. When you're doing it, we can have you back on the show. So, of course, that's fatuous, and I was taking you from a sort of fatuous position, just because it's quite good tearing the sort of wings off butterflies, as it were, metaphorically speaking, of course, and taking the piss out of the great and good of the insurtech sector, such as yourself. But actually, in all seriousness, I think it would be better reworded along the lines that if you look at industry as a whole, I did something about 5 odd years ago, long before the podcast, 5 or 7 years ago, talking about the fact that since I'd entered work and started my career, there'd been a bifurcation in companies, and that a lot of companies were going towards being battery hens, free-range chickens. And the middle ground where I started has actually sort of been sagging. So there's a lot of sort of huge businesses which are sort of a process-driven.
Yep.
And got kids who are sort of 21 next week and 19. I know lots of people at that state. And they're looking at careers and all that kind of stuff. And there is a bit of a stark choice between becoming a worker bee, becoming a work ant in a vast organisation where you're doing a tiny bit of a tiny bit. It's what I call the factorisation of society. It's the thing that sort of Henry Ford perfected, which is that you're no longer a craftsman that builds a whole car yourself. You're somebody who puts the nut on the left front wheel all your bloody life, or at least you sort of think. So there's that kind of role of people, which is just actually transferring people into battery hens, into something which is very easy at some point to computerise. There's the other thing, and you've used the phrase human being, which I'm entirely with, which is that you can take the human being, you can take new graduates and that, and as much as possible, you can try and leverage the human being in them. You can try and use their creativity. You can try and use their God-given powers to make something different in the world, to make the world better, and emphasise that. So I think I would actually agree with you if we change the language to, it's not so much about sort of using people, because all businesses have got people, no matter where they are, but it's really a question that I think you're advocating, and I entirely agree, directly and also for kids and all that kind of stuff, is actually trying to help people be human beings and to use their creative capacity. Now, I shall give you no chance to reply that immediately in case you disagree with me, because otherwise it was going all day. I don't think you would dare, because you actually don't anyway, and that's what we're talking about. And before we wrap up the show, talking of human beings, I'd like to thank all you listeners out there. I appreciate you all. It's very nice to hear from you all now and then. I get tons of LinkedIn spam, so please bear with me if I'm a bit slow thanking you for your thanks. And I'd like to thank my brand partners for the podcast, Blue Motor Finance, who are, according to the 2018 FT1000, the fastest growing FS business in Europe. Blue's award-winning technology has supported over $2 billion of lending, working with over 3,700 UK motor retailers. I'd also like to give a special thanks to Capital.com, who are retiring today. Thank you, Capital.com, for your support. They make CFD trading more accessible and engaging in 23 languages. 500,000 downloads in 51 countries. Check out Capital.com or download the app. Trading is risky. Smart Pension, who are fast, secure and free. Check out their UK workplace pensions at autoenrollment.co.uk. Right, so Stephen, you survived this far, and I like the idea that you're trying to turn people into human beings rather than into some sort of version of robots processing stuff. We've mentioned Bought by Many once or twice in the show. In terms of the millions of listeners out there, what breadcrumbs would you like to throw in the water for the fishes to nibble?
Okay, Mike, so without any pre-planning, how about I draw together all of the ideas about human beings, students looking for new jobs, who's going to be attracted to the insurance industry, and set out what the ideal person who would join this industry would look like.
If you do all that in less than 6 words, I'll be bloody impressed, actually.
Okay, so I'm not sure but 6 sentences. So a genuine interest and focus in technology. I think that the solution of this, the future of this industry is genuinely going to be built out of people who really understand and get tech. I think it's critically important, and hopefully you've heard that in everything that I've said, that customers have got to come first. They've got to be put in front of profits. Profits will come later, but you've got to think about the consumer at the very beginning of this whole process. Know the space. So if you're a leader of this industry, really know what you're up to, really understand what drives this industry. If you are looking to enter this industry for the very first time, look to understand it, to learn it, to really get to grips with it. Be bold, be aspirational, set huge, great stretching targets for yourselves. We definitely do for ourselves. And finally, and last but definitely by no means least, care. Care about your customers, care about what it is that you're insuring, care about your colleagues, care about the company you work for, and hopefully together we can build an insurer that it's possible to love. We've got a long, long, long way to go. At the moment, we've got lots of insurers that people love to hate, but we need to build an insurer that people want to love.
That sounds like a great keynote speech. And last but not least, you presumably like even more customers than you have at the moment. And I presume you're just serving customers in the UK.
So, yeah, good question. So we go live in Sweden in February. Thank you for that plug, Mike. Much appreciated. So the Swedish population have lots to look forward to, and hopefully they'll find an insurance business that they can love as well.
And one of the problems of brand expansion was, I think, 3 years ago you were focusing on doggies, but now you're focusing on whatever, 600 or different things. So how do you get the message across brand expansion? Do you say, oh, actually, we cover quite a lot, listeners, so those of you in the UK, go and check us out in case we cover your sector? Or
we don't do any mass marketing. You'll never see us do kind of broad brand build.
So how do you summarise your product range then?
So we do a lot of work in niche travel. So we're interested in older or unwell travellers. We're focused on the bottom end of SME, so owner-run businesses, micro-businesses, beauty therapists, yoga instructors, landscape gardeners, that kind of thing.
What about podcasters?
Not quite podcasters just yet. It might be a very small community. But if you're in that space, we will make it easy for you to find us, whether it's through social media or online on search. So hopefully we don't have to do too much plugging of who we are and what we do to you. You'll come across us anyway.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for that, Stephen. It's been very good to catch up. You say you formed in 2012, and it wasn't just a question that people didn't care then. As you say, they sent you away with a flea in your ear.
Yes.
And it's only with admirable persistence that sort of overnight success comes after many years. I always mention the Beatles, who sort of flogged their way through sort of dives in Berlin and places like that for year after year after year with very little success, and, you know, people booing them and chucking beer over them and all that kind of stuff. And unlike the Beatles, I didn't think you're going to make any sort of top-selling albums about LSD or anything like that, but I hope that you do, in a similar way, transform the insurance industry, and at least in small part, in offering to consumers and those woke enough to check you out using their phones and their interwebs, a better service for the good of all concerned. So I look forward to speaking to you in 3 years' time when you're no doubt even greater and wiser than you are now.
So, Mike, I can't believe it's been 3.5 years since we last spoke. Please don't keep a stranger. Next time, I promise we'll let you in and make it easy for you to get through the steel front door.
Good. And next time I'll find out whether people were useful after all or whether you've changed your tune. Great. Thanks for that, Stephen.
Thanks, Mike. To you too.
Thanks for listening. If you have consulting, advisory/non-exec, or media needs in the FS or fintech space, get in touch with me at mike@londonfintechpodcast.com.
We could sit in a bender all day, watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. To come away from the city, the tarmac so dead and the people so sad. Come away from the city, but with the faces so grey, with the pain of the everyday. We'll be right back. We are wild like the mountains and the trees. Can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fit in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me. 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 Watch the firelight dance with me.